success or failure. The content of the ego varies from person to person, but in every ego, the same structure operates. In other words, egos only differ on the surface. Deep down, they are all the same. In what way are they all the same? They live on identification and separation. When you live through the mind-made self comprised of thoughts and emotion that is the ego, the basis of your identity is precarious because thoughts and emotion are by their very nature ephemeral, fleeting, meaning they're not permanent, right?
It's not always.
So every ego is continuously struggling for survival, trying to protect and enlarge itself. To uphold the I thought, it needs to the opposite thought of the other. The conceptual I cannot survive without the conceptual other. The others are most other when I see them as my enemies. At one end of the scale of this unconscious egoic pattern lies the egoic compulsive habit of fault-finding and complaining about others. Jesus referred to it when he said, "Why do you see the speck that is in your brother's eye, but do not notice the log that is in your own eye?" At the other end of the scale, there is physical violence between individuals and warfare between nations. In the Bible, Jesus' question remains unanswered, but the answer is, of course, because when I criticize or condemn another, it makes me feel bigger and superior. So that's that first part, getting to know the ego a little bit and how it operates, where it comes from. Deep down, they're all the same. That's why it's called the collective ego. And we're now going to move on to the next chapter, and the beginning of that is called Role-Playing the Many Faces of the Ego. And this first part here is just a page and a half, but it's pretty powerful. So, page 85, Role-Playing the Many Faces of the Ego. An ego that wants something from another, and what ego doesn't, will usually play some kind of role to get its needs met. An ego that wants something from another, and what ego doesn't, will usually play some kind of role to get its needs met, be they material gain, a sense of power, superiority, or specialness, or some kind of gratification, be it physical or psychological. Usually people are completely unaware of the roles they play. They are those roles. Some of the roles are subtle, others are blatantly obvious, except to the person playing it. Some roles are designed simply to get attention from others. The ego thrives on others' attention, which is, after all, a form of psychic energy. The ego doesn't know that the source of all energy is within you, so it seeks it outside, as gratifications from others, or from acceptance from your friends and family and boss, and stuff like that. It is not the formless attention, which is presence, that the ego seeks, but attention in some form, such as recognition, praise, admiration, or just to be noticed in some way, to have its existence acknowledged. A shy person who is afraid of the attention of others is not free of ego, but has an ambivalent ego that both wants and fears attention from others. The fear is that the attention may take the form of disapproval or criticism, that is to say, something that diminishes the sense of self rather than enhances it. So the shy person's fear of attention is greater than his or her need of attention. Shyness often goes with a self-concept that is predominantly negative, the belief of being inadequate. Any conceptual sense of self, seeing myself as this or that, is ego. Whether predominantly positive, I am the greatest, or negative, I am no good. Behind every positive self-concept is the hidden fear of not being good enough. Behind every negative self-concept is the hidden desire of being the greatest or better than others. Behind the confident ego's feeling of and continuing need for superiority is the unconscious fear of inferiority. Conversely, the shy, inadequate ego that feels inferior has a strong hidden desire for superiority. Many people fluctuate between feelings of inferiority and superiority, depending on situations or the people they come into contact with. All you need to know and observe in yourself is this. Whenever you feel superior or inferior to anyone, that's the ego in you. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Yeah, it makes total sense. So what it is those thoughts and feelings that we carry inside, because feelings can also be ego, that we carry inside that are either making us feel like we're less or more than anyone, better or worse, good enough, not good enough. And depending on how you use your thoughts in the advantage of presence, it's how you express yourself, right? Because if you, because ego is running through you, this is what you not only will feel and think, but you will also express it, right?
Yeah, I gather that it's trying to explain that you can use ego. Wow, that was weird. That ego tends to disappear when you are, or to you disappear when you are thinking that you're using it positively, like you're giving yourself self-encouragement, you're better than them, you're better than that, you can do it, you're better than them, but that is still a form of ego. It's on both spectrums.
Depends, right? Because you can also talk good about yourself and not have it in the surface of ego, right?
Yeah.
Because you can have a clear goal, you can have a clear vision of something you want to accomplish emotionally or professionally or whatever it is. And when you have that clear goal, you know what you need to do to become those things. Ask that girl out, right?
Yeah.
What you do is you gotta whatever manning up means, right? You gotta figure out how to build that confidence in yourself, which is a good thing, right?
Mm-hmm.
So yeah.
It's a good thing to build the confidence in yourself, but the moment you start comparing yourself to others,
that's when you're in an ego trap. Yeah, that's when it's ego. Perfect. Yeah. To add something to this segment, there's a subtitle. That is called The Collective Ego. And I should have seen that in the first section of this podcast, but you can add it now. This is important because he speaks directly about the collective ego, which makes sense to include. Sorry. How hard is it to live with yourself? One of the ways in which the ego attempts to escape the unsatisfactoriness of personal selfhood is to enlarge and strengthen its sense of self by identifying with a group, a nation, political party, corporation, institution, sect, club, gang, football team. In some cases, the personal ego seems to dissolve completely as someone dedicates his or her life to working selflessly for the greater good of the collective without demanding personal rewards, recognition, or aggrandizement. What a relief to be freed of the dreadful burden of personal self. The members of the collective feel happy and fulfilled, no matter how hard they work, how many sacrifices they make. They appear to have gone beyond ego. The question is, have they truly become free, or has the ego simply shifted from the personal to the collective? A collective ego manifests the same characteristics as the personal ego, such as the need for conflict and enemies, the need for more, the need to be right against others who are wrong, and so on. Sooner or later, the collective will come into conflict with other collectives, because it unconsciously seeks conflict and it needs opposition to define its boundary and thus its identity. Its members will then experience the suffering that inevitably comes in the wake of an ego-motivated action. At that point, they may wake up and realize that that their collective has a strong elements of insanity. It can be painful at first to suddenly wake up and realize that the collective you had identified with and worked for is actually insane. Some people at that point become cynical or bitter and henceforth deny all values, all worth. This means that they quickly adopted another belief system when the previous ones was recognized as illusory and therefore collapsed. They didn't face the death of their ego, but ran away and reincarnated into a new one. A collective ego is usually more unconscious than the individuals that make up that ego. For example, crowds, which are temporary collective egoic entities, are capable of committing atrocities that the individual away from the crowd would not be. Nations not infrequently engage in behavior that would be immediately recognizable as psychopathic and in an individual. As the new consciousness emerges, some people will feel called upon to form groups that reflect the enlightened consciousness. These groups will not be collective egos. The individuals who wake up and up these groups will have no need to define their identity through them. They no longer look at any form to define who they are. If the members that make up those groups are not totally free of ego yet, there will be enough awareness in them to recognize the ego in themselves or in others as soon as it appears. However, constant alertness is required since the ego will try to make over and reassert itself in any way it can. Dissolving the human ego by bringing it into the light of awareness, this will be one of the main purposes of these groups, whether they be enlightened businesses, charitable organizations, schools, or communities of people living together. Enlightened collectives will fulfill an important function in the arising of the new consciousness. Just as egoic collectives pull you into unconsciousness and suffering, the enlightened collective can be a vortex for consciousness that will accelerate the planetary shift.
What a sentence.
Yeah. So...